This is Gorgeous Escapes. Hello, I'm here on Radio Gorgeous with Sarah Tucker. Welcome. She's from our Gorgeous Escapes section, so she's our travel journalist. How are you?
I'm very, very well, thank you.
So what have you been up to?
Well, I've just celebrated my 50th birthday, halfway there. And I know they say 50 is the new 30, but I disagree with that. I just got married when I was 30, and I don't want to be 30 again. So 50 is the new 50. I think you should be proud to be 50. And I know a lot of people who start to write their bucket lists at 50. I've done a lot of mine. I never write bucket lists. And I think as a travel writer and a journalist and broadcaster, I've already travelled quite a bit as well. So I've got to be inventive and think about what else I want to do, because I'm on the right path anyway.
Funny you're talking about bucket lists, because I really want to do a whole programme about it, and people can contact us and tell us what their bucket lists are. Because I've got one, and mine's things like trekking the Himalayas, going on a mindfulness course, learning how to drive a moped.
I think when people write bucket lists, they should really try and keep them short and succinct. Something like 10, not 50. I know sometimes people do 50 or 100.
I could only think of 10, actually.
Yeah, but 10 is a really good, it's quite a powerful number. And there's always usually something like write a book or do something constructive, different areas. But travel always comes
always.
Up in always comes always. Up in it. And I think what people tend to forget is that if it's too vague and too obtuse, like travel around the world, it's got to be, usually, the more specific it is, the more likely you will actually do it.
It will manifest,
and you can manifest it. Yeah. For example, go skydiving where? Do you want to go skydiving in Oxfordshire, which I've done, or go skydiving in Mauritius, which I've done? Now, skydiving in Mauritius is phenomenal.
But harder to get to.
But you can do lots of other different things as well. And if you meet most skydivers who do it professionally around the world, they will say the place to do it is in New Zealand. So if you're going to skydive, do it in New Zealand, because that's when it is, you know, it's, and you can make a real sort of like event around it. And if you want to, you know, go to New Zealand, do other things around it as well. So it's really, you've got with travel, it's whether you want the short, sharp shock experience or you want a whole journey that's going to manifest.
I think it's about a journey, isn't it? Because bucket lists are about kind of changing your perception, your view, you know, changing your inner self, really, aren't they?
Well, yes, and it's interesting that you talked about that. I recently been writing a lot more about how travel can change you as a person.
That's what we're going to come on to, because you've written the A to Zen of travel, and it's coming out on paperback. A to Zen must be something to do with inner change.
You're right there. It is to do with inner change. I've always written, you know, for the past 20 years, I've written and I've been on TV talking about, you know, destinations, very much about what you do and what you see when you get there. And it's all very prescriptive. And I've increasingly found as I've got older and I've written more that when I'm interviewing people who just come back from journeys, how some journeys change them. You know, I think most people talk about India. When they go to India, it changes them, or South America. Something sort of almost spiritual happens to them. But it doesn't always follow with everybody. So one person can go to India and come back enlightened, and another person can go to India and come back completely disillusioned, see the poverty, see completely different things and feel completely different things. And I'm studying a psychology degree at the moment, because I've been working with so many clinical psychologists and psychoanalysts and counsellors for my fiction novels over the years. I became very, very interested about what made people tick, and the fact that when you go on some journeys, you can come back, like if you've got issues with heartbreak or depression, or if you've got anger management issues, something like that.
Yeah.
You can come back from a holiday and you've literally got rid of your emotional baggage. It's just gone. And it lasts longer than the tan, basically. Whereas you can go to the same destination the next year, or you can go in a different way or with different friends. And you can come back and yes, you've got the same tan, but you feel somehow heavier. You've got other people's stuff and you've accumulated more stuff of your own. Wow. So I started to do some research and interviewed quite a few people. And I met a guy called Professor Edward de Bono. And some of us who are sort of like older here, sort of like 50 plus, will remember this man. He was the guy really who invented lateral thinking, or the concept of lateral thinking. Think about things in a completely different way, really turning things on its head. And that is the concept of lateral thinking, really. And I worked with him on this book, The A to Zen of Travel, focusing very much on how journeys, specific journeys, can rid you of specific emotional baggage. Like,
okay, tell us. Okay, what about divorce? Come on.
A divorce. How can travel rid you of anxiety? The thing with divorce is
it's feeling bad afterwards.
It's anxiety, it's depression, it's anger, it's sadness. It's a whole combination of things. Mm. And interestingly, what I've done with the book is that I've very much focused on journeys for anxiety, journeys for sadness, journeys for depression. And so there's a lot of specific journeys that can help you with a lot of those emotions, because with divorce, it's not just one emotion you're dealing with. And it's a lot. And also that you'll have this, what I call this push-pull effect, where you'll feel regret and you'll love him, and anger, and you'll loathe him. And that will happen probably in a split second, which is all completely normal. So frequently, the sort of journeys that you need to take for that are those where the culture is overwhelms you. Wow. You know, it's a bit like people say, you know, when you're lonely, go to a city, go on a city break. It's the worst possible trip you can actually take. Because I've put in the book those trips to go for and those to avoid. And I think if you're lonely, for example, you should ironically go to big open spaces, you know, wilderness, the Yukon, the Utah, rather than to cities where you can feel very lonely in a crowd.
Well, you can actually.
And a lot of people wake up, like I must admit, I woke up on my 50th birthday and I was alone, but I didn't feel alone. And there's a lot of people who wake up on a seminal birthday and they're with someone, and they feel alone, you know. So it's a lot of it is to do with the feeling. And I look about things like think about things like that. But also, not only have I thought about things like anxiety and sadness and what journeys work. You know, you mentioned specifically about all the emotions that divorce brings up. I recently went to China. And I'm not suggesting if you're divorced, everyone should just head to China. But it's just an example that I've given and why a place like that and a culture like that works. Because it's quite a seminal journey to take. The culture and the history of that country is so phenomenal. It's so vast, so overwhelming. It puts divorce and your emotion into perspective, because when you're walking over a great wall and you're realizing the millions of people that died in building the wall, and you're listening about the history of the forbidden temple, and you're walking in Tiananmen Square, and you're seeing the culture and the fact, like, I'm sitting here with you now and your gorgeous little dog is by your side, and the fact that they would eat gorgeous little dogs like that in China. It's sort of that there's a strength and a power to that culture that really completely distracts you, overwhelms you, and cleanses you. Whereas I think sometimes if you go to a Western culture, which tends to nurture heartbreak and goes with the whole tragedy of it all, and how and makes your it actually compounds your anger, your grief, your depression, your sadness, your up and down.
But you went somewhere really romantic. It was really sad.
Well, again,
China's quite out there. It's questioning place, isn't it?
It is very much a questioning place, but but they look at emotion and they look at relationships in a totally different way. And if you absorb yourself into a culture, and China isn't the sort of place that tends to stand back from you, because some cultures you can go to and you can take or leave them, really. You can walk through them without really touching upon them, sort of tiptoeing through them. Whereas there's other cultures, like the Italian culture is another one. You can't really go to Italy and not be consumed by the passion of the place. It sort of jumps on you and stamps onto you until you give in to it. The same with if you go to somewhere like Argentina, or the same if you go to somewhere like, as I said, China. It really, you become blotting paper. And I think when you're going through something like that, it's a really good idea.
You can rely on Radio Gorgeous.
I also talk about things like, rather than emotional issues, but for want of a better word, sins, I suppose. You know, if you've got flaws, like if you're greedy, or if, I don't talk about the greedy one, but also vain or jealous and things like that. So places to go to if you suffer from sort of like envy or... Particularly, I mentioned about greed. It's an obvious thing. Some of the journeys that I recommend and some of the things to avoid are common sense. If you are a glutton, do not go on an all-inclusive holiday and do not go on a cruise ship. It sounds an obvious thing to say, because the amount of food that you get when you're cruising is just phenomenal. And I suppose there's sort of like a way of thinking that you see so much food, it will put you off eating. But
it doesn't, because I've been on one. It's something you get into a habit, you know, because it's all coming, and you have the big breakfast, so you carry on with the, you know, 11 o'clock snack, then you have a large lunch, and you have the afternoon tea. And also, it's just part of the culture on board, isn't it?
It's very much part of the culture. And you know, cruising is great for lots of other things, but if you're greedy and if you're lazy, it is not a good journey. It is not a good holiday option to choose from. You know, as I said, I've talked about, I've called journeys, I've used Edward's lateral thinking technique. So for each, you know, for things like anxiety and depression and sadness, I've given you journey types that you should look out for. Yeah. And also,
because I'm going to think of a holiday and you match it with emotion. What about trekking? Because I'm very interested in trekking. What sort of emotion would that be good for?
Well, again, it's where you trek. And also I talk about climates, whether it's a hot or cold climate. It's like trekking is very good for anxiety. It's very good if you lack, if you're lacking in focus, emotional direction. It's very good if you're going through some sort of midlife crisis. Yeah. But again, trekking is good if you're going from a place like A to B. Anywhere where you are trekking and you're going around in a circle, so in a way that you're trekking somewhere and you end up where you started, that is not good psychologically, because psychologically you're ending up where you started. I know that sounds silly, but actually psychologically you'll be saying, I've gone all this way and I've come back to just where I started, so I want to move on. The whole concept of moving on, of trekking, is about getting somewhere. Trekking also, if you're, you know, there's trekking where you're literally going through wilderness, or trekking if you're going up a mountain. If you have anger management issues or something which is actually much more challenging, is very good, because you don't have time to worry, have anxiety, to lack focus, to be angry. You've just got to concentrate on where you're going and the fact that you've got to put your hands and your legs in the right position, and that you've got to listen to somebody. Frequently, if you're feeling lonely, trekking is actually a really, really good idea. Now, you can have a small group, or you can have a one-on-one session, but with somebody. But the guide needs to be, for want of a better phrase, a captain, my captain. I don't know if anyone's seen that film, Dead Poets Society, but there's a character, there's a teacher in it who really instills enthusiasm and passion into sort of like his pupils. And you get guides out there when you travel, the Indiana Joneses and the Crocodile Dundees of this world, who are... really, you will follow them to the end of the earth. And that is what you need with something like that, a trek. cold or cool climates or warm climates are best as well, because when it's too hot, and again, as a culture, we always tend to go to, we want, because we don't get the sun in this country.
We are heat sun junkies.
We are heat and sun junkies, Josephine. So we go and we burn ourselves and we may do activities, but if you think about what a lot of us do, we go to a beach, we lie on a beach, we look at our hot, sweaty, possibly fat bodies, and we think we're beach whales, and we are beach whales, but only because we're choosing to be that way. So
and we're drinking cocktails from dawn till dusk.
We're drinking cocktails from dusk. So consequently, what I wanted to do is turn it on its head. Like I've been talking to a lot of actually travel editors about the book, and they love it. But a few of them who've read the book said, Sarah, you're taking a dig at us, because we write about specific destinations, and you're saying that actually, you know, you should think about travel in a totally different way. And I said, well, no, I'm not taking a dig at you, but what I'm saying is that people should still travel, but they should think about it. It's a bit like travel is like medicine. The medicine is good, but if you prescribe it the wrong way, not only will it not do you good, but it will actually do you harm. And as I said with the cruising idea, you come back, and if you're greedy, you come back fatter. You know, and if you're lazy, you come back lazier. Yeah. And you've had a holiday and you've paid for it. You've paid to do it as well. So I think really what I've done is I've combined my knowledge of psychology, what makes people tick, 20 years experience of travel, about what destinations. I've also included, I suppose, you know, some personal experiences and experience of other people I've known that when they've been on a trip and they've come back from it, and how it has helped them, as I said, with anger, with grief, with bereavement, with depression, but also things I said like vanity. And I've also
I'm quite vain.
No, you're not. You're gorgeous. As I said, you're well. It's a well chosen radio name. But
where would you send a vain person? I'm intrigued.
A vain person is interesting. You do a sort of like, you can either do a combination of things. And I said I've given it sort of like three examples. But as I said, I've called the journeys different names, and there's something called the Simon Cowell journey. And the Simon Cowell journey is one of my favourite ones. If you think how Simon Cowell deals with people, there's something called a compliment sandwich. So when you say to somebody, you're wonderful, you're fabulous, but you haven't got the job, but I wish you well. Like, he doesn't do the you're wonderful and you're fabulous. He'll just go, you haven't got the job, and he won't do the other bit at the end either. And it's sort of like a short, sharp, straight down the line journey. So it's that if you're vain, go to a place where, either go to a place where vanity is, again, it's totally irrelevant. So again, you're talking about sort of like a trekking trip, but a trekking trip in somewhere like, you know, the Amazon, where I always remember, or Canada, this is a good example. I went on a trip to the Algonquin, which is kayaking just outside Toronto. So lots of opportunity to be Toronto in vain, because city, lots of opportunity to show off. But when you go into the wilderness, you don't wear any perfume. If you wear perfume, you attract mosquitoes like crazy, or you don't wear any product because you attract. So actually, any vanity completely goes down to the way. You're just the most important thing. You have something to eat, somewhere to sleep.
So you're
absolutely stripped of anything. So that is literally it's down to the bone. The other alternative is to go to the other extreme and go somewhere like Monte Carlo, where there are people who are even vainer than you are, and really, again, it puts something into.
They're so pretentious and ghastly that it makes you think, God, I'm not that bad.
But also, it's the amount of money there. It's sort of like it's almost because there's beautiful parts to it. But it just puts things in. If you think you're vain, it puts into perspective. And also, you see the ugly side of it too. So I would say either those two journeys, but essentially, they go straight to the heart of it straight away, without dilly dallying. And I think this is what I've tried to do, because, you know, I've mentioned about China before. You don't have to schlep all the way over to China, but I think if you've got a lot of big emotions rolling around, you need a culture that can literally engulf you. And
so India would be good, South America would be good.
Well, India is an interesting one, because a lot of people, when they go to India, they say they come back enlightened, they think about things in a different way.
Yeah.
But as we've recently seen with India, some of their culture and especially their attitude towards women is disturbing, and there's a dark side to the place as well. So I think it's also a case of, and I've mentioned destinations in the book, but it's really a case also of understanding that just because your friend went to Argentina and had a fabulous time there, it doesn't mean you're going to have it. Just because it had an impact on her anxiety or sadness or heartbreak, it's what I've really done is I've gone into why, how it will work for you. And as I said, given examples of specific journeys so that you could choose it. It's a bit like, as I said, it's a bit like a medicine. Some people like homeopathy, some people, kinesiology works for them, some aromatherapy, some sort of like, you know, just going to their GP. And I've treated it very much like that. And also I've done, at the end of the book, I've done an alphabet, literally the A to Z, of all the, what I call the, you know, the travel myths, the holiday myths, because our industry, the travel industry, is called, there's other journalists in other departments call it the perfume counter. And the perfume counter, they call it basically because we make everything smell much sweeter than it actually is. And I have, and sometimes, ironically, we put a, you know, we spruce something up that actually doesn't need to. It's a bit like that image of the rose, which is beautiful anyway, and we paint it and we put sparklers on it and things like that, and it doesn't actually, just seeing it as it is, it's phenomenal enough. I think, again, you know, Canada, I've got a love of Canada, that doesn't really need, when you go there, it sells itself, and it's quite expensive to get there, but it sells itself while you're there. And I think sometimes it's just a case of, when you go and visit a country, allowing yourself to absorb the culture, to really see with better eyes, and to, especially cultures which are very open with their emotions. As a culture, the British, the English are very closed. Our body language is closed. We hold everything close to our chest, literally close to our chest. And we don't... We're not open. If you think about how open the Italians are, physically and expressive, their hands are like windmills when they're talking, a lot of the different cultures. When we're in a culture which is emotionally open, we open up as well. And I think that's a really good thing.
It is. So who publishes it?
Well, it will be published by Brandt, the travel publisher, but you'll be able to get it in Amazon or good bookshops. And it's also out on Kindle as well at the moment.
Fabulous. Perfect for travelling. Now, I said I really wanted, because people really are, and it's summer, gardens are lovely, holidays coming up, especially for children's holidays. Where can we talk about some days out in England or Britain?
Well, there's a lot recently been said about staycations, and if we've had good weather, which we recently have had, I think this country has so much to offer. But I recently learned about this organisation called Landmark Trust. Now, they've been about for a very, very, very long time, and they've recently got a very good marketing guy who's really taken by the scruff of the neck and really redefined and refocused what is out there, because there are some phenomenal properties out there. If you just go on your internet website and just Google Landmark Trust and put it in and just see the properties, the interesting properties where you can stay for a week. It's usually a week, sometimes it's for a weekend, but
weekends are more in the winter, I think.
Weekends more in the winter, but you know, that, you know, ideal properties for romantic breaks,
pineapple.
Well, yeah. Yes. There's sort of like there
there's
are
wacky places.
There's some interesting wacky places throughout the country.
Yeah.
And it's really, they've always been there, and I think it just hasn't been marketed effectively. And the history behind these places as well. I am going to, in a couple of months' time, I'm going to a property down in Somerset, or up in Somerset, is it? I'm trying to think if it's across. Up or down. Across in Somerset. And it's got its own lake. It the history is sort of like dates back to sort of like the 18th century. It's sort of like it's got a ghost, allegedly. You know, some of these properties, not all of them, except dogs. So if you've got a dog, you know, it's sort of like it's really, really good to go to, because a lot of properties now, you know, they're very iffy about dogs, and even iffy about children. But it is worthwhile having a look and booking in advance, and also thinking about something like that as opposed to staying in a bed and breakfast or staying in a hotel, just as an option. It's something different. And I also think it's something that, again, the children, if you have a family, will appreciate as well. It's because it shows a little imagination. And I think coming back to the other thing we were talking about, the sort of like the traveling because of emotions and dealing with specific issues, I think that anything that takes you off the norm, slightly off the comfort zone, which this does as well, because some of them are quite quirky, is a really good idea.
Yeah, like I've slept in a tower, and you know it's got like up cold stone steps to get to the bedroom, and it was really exciting though.
Well, I don't know about cold stone steps. I remember once, like, there was another company, it was called something. It was about eccentric places to stay, but I think Landmark Trust has got so many eccentric places to stay. You can stay in a jail, you can stay in a brothel, a place that used to be a brothel, you can stay in a place that used to be a lighthouse. I was a schoolhouse, so, you know, there's a sort of like, there's some things that are slightly more unusual than others, and I think from a fun perspective, I think that's interesting to do. The only thing I will say is that when you go to these places, and I think the sort of like the mum will be pleased about this as well, I really strongly recommend, apart from breakfast, you eat out, because they're designed, they're interesting places to stay, but try and pick ones that are fairly close to either a village or a town where you know where the local pub is, something like that, because one, it gives yourself a break, and also because these places are such reasonable places to stay in. The budget that you would have saved on not going to a B&B or not going to a boutique hotel or whatever, you can actually spend that on going out and have something to eat. That's the only thing I would recommend with these places, because they're beautiful, but they're very beautiful to stay and enjoy, and quirky and interesting. And apart, as I said, from the breakfast, because that's nice, something to do like that, go out and explore, because they're always set in very interesting, unusual, sometimes quite dramatic places where you can go for walks. Frequently they're by rivers, and they're accessible as well. There's only, I think, one place that I've visited once where, you know, it's always, everyone says, oh, well, you've got the sat nav, but when you're going to places and the sat nav gives way 5 minutes before you actually do to get, and you're stuck between these huge hedges. There's a few of those places out there. So again, always make
sure. That's an adventure, isn't it?
It is an adventure. Yes, yeah. But I know. But if you've got three kids in the back going, who've been going for an hour, are we there yet?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you've got to be realistic about it. So that's the only thing I will say. Just contact them. Make sure it's always that last 5 minutes, or is the sat nav going to work for the last 5 minutes? Because they are so interesting, some of these places. You've got to...
They're off the beaten track,
they
literally.
They are. Yeah.
So lovely to have you on today. You've never stopped talking.
I'm so sorry. I don't get out much. You know, when I get...
Well, now you're 50, you're going to be out a lot more. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you very much, Josephine.